I'll stand way back here. You know, I was thinking last night, this sound system is really good. You can hear this. And Juanita talks so much like a lady. She is such a lady. And Irene does too. And this is not the way I talk. I get loud. And so I might stand back there. But good morning. I am Marlene Hedger, and I am a very grateful member of Al-Anon Family Groups. And I thank Milt very much for calling and asking my husband and me to talk down here. This has been really fun. I love going new places, and even though I'm scared to death, honest to God, I'm scared to death of meeting new people and talking in front of people. I have fun, especially after I get finished talking. I have a lot of fun. And so in about an hour, I'm going to feel better, and you will too, because I'll be done. Thank you very much for introducing me, Irene. When I told her that I'm quiet and shy, honestly, my personality is. I mean, I truly am quiet and shy on the inside, and people go around talking all the time about how loud and wild and crazy and stuff and I am, and it's like, I don't know who you're talking about, because I am quiet and shy. But that there's this, maybe there's this other person inside of me. And I hear it a lot, you know, because I sponsor people, and one of the reasons why they ask me to be their sponsor is because I'm happy a lot and stuff. But they say sometimes they do need to kind of put sunglasses on to tone me down a little bit, because, you know, I am happy a lot. But I haven't always been happy a lot. It's only because of AA and Al-Anon and Alateen that my life is as happy as it has been today. Juanita said yesterday, day before yesterday, she said, you could get excited about a lake bed drying up. And it's like, yeah, I could. Because if you had lived where I lived, a dry creek bed could be peaceful and serene, you know? It could be nice. But anyway, I'll tell you where I came from. I came from southern Kentucky, a little country town. I know you can't tell by my voice that is echoing back at me. But a little country town down in southern Kentucky. And I'm the 11th kid of 14 kids. And I am Catholic, no doubt. You know, I'm Catholic all the way through. And there were 7 girls and 7 boys in my family. And we lived on a farm, and, you know, I don't know if they had the children to raise the food, to feed the children, or what, because they could have quit growing so much stuff if they hadn't had so many children. But maybe they were trying to catch up and make a profit by having more little slave children to help grow more farms. I don't know. You know, I really don't know, and it doesn't matter. I'm just happy they didn't quit before they got to the 11th one, which they could have. And it's really goofy because my older brothers, they would tease pretty mean back when I was young, and they told me that I was adopted. Now, why would anybody adopt an 11th child? I mean, and I just felt odd. I just felt odd my whole life, and it was, I think until I was about 35 years old, it was pretty hard for me to see outside of just me. It was, my world was about this big, you know, and it was just so hard for me to see outside of myself. I think Tammy was talking about being emotionally retarded last night. No, it wasn't emotionally retarded. It was socially retarded. Well, I was socially and emotionally retarded. I mean, I just didn't know so many things. And so many things that my brothers and sisters heard and learned that I did not. And I don't know where I was, but I just didn't get it. So many things. I went to Catholic school from the first grade to the eighth grade. The first day of the first grade, I fell in love. And I've been in love the rest of my whole life. I mean, I love being in love. I love the idea of being in love. I knew that being in love with the perfect man was going to make my life wonderful, and that's all I needed, was the perfect man. And I could find him, and I just loved him always from the very beginning. And in Catholic school, they don't talk, back then they didn't talk so much about love or anything like that. They They just, to me, I thought they taught a whole lot about going to hell and learning all these rules and following the rules. And I was just talking to Irene a little while ago. My memorization has never been great. I never was very good at memorizing poems or you know, being in the plays and stuff like that. I couldn't remember that good. So to try to follow the Ten Commandments meant I either needed to keep them written and stuffed in my pocket, or I had to memorize them. And I couldn't. There's no way I could do that. And I certainly was not going to read them every time I turned around. So I knew I was not going to be able to keep those rules. And then on top of the Ten Commandments, they had a whole bunch of other stuff. Like, you were supposed to be still in church and not talk. And, oh, God asked me to be still. I mean, it's impossible. And to try to be good. You know, I just knew very young in the first grade I could not be as good as those nuns thought I ought to be. So there was no middle for me. I'm an all or nothing kind of person. And so it's like, if you can't be good enough to go to heaven, you're just going to go flat straight to hell. And that's where I was going. But I was going to hang out with the other people that were going to hell too, and we were going to have a lot of fun before we got there. So I'm really into fun. I'm still into having a lot of fun. I really like having fun. Tammy talked about so many things. There was so much like me last night. You know, I hung out with guys that liked to get in trouble. Now, I thought that I was a good girl. And honestly, I was. I mean, I wasn't cruising around trying to find trouble, and I wasn't disrespectful to my mom, dad, and stuff like that. It's just I hung out with these fellas that were always getting in trouble. And they were the ones that were really fun. I mean, the good guys that would sit in the front of the bus and save me a seat and study and all that stuff, they were boring. And I didn't like hanging out with them. I liked hanging out with the fellas that would teach me how to drive. I used to skip religion class and go out with the fellas and learn how to drive. And I was 12, 13 years old. I hung out with my brothers on the farm anyway. You know, I had seven sisters, so my mom, you know, they really didn't need me in the house to learn how to do all that cooking and cleaning and crud. You know, thank God, because that wasn't me. So I would get to hang out with my brothers all the time, and they taught me how to drive the tractor and ride horses and do all that farming stuff. And then when I went to school, I always hung out with the guys. And everybody always said that I was flirting. And it's just like now when people tell me I have this outrageous personality and I'm kind of loud and rowdy and stuff, it's like, no, I'm not. I'm quiet, shy. So I guess, I mean, it was happening back then too. I mean, you know, other people see me in a way that I don't see myself sometimes. But anyway, I was just hanging out with the fellas that was having a lot of fun. But I would get in trouble. Like one time, I think it was like in the second grade, my cousin asked me if he could see my underwear. He'd give me a nickel if he could see my drawers. You know, now what's the big deal about seeing somebody's drawers? I had seven brothers and six sisters, and my mom and dad, we all lived in a three-room house. Not a three-bedroom house, a three-room house. So people saw my drawers on a daily basis. They were homemade flannel drawers that my mama made me. So I thought, what's the big deal? You know, I knew nothing about why you shouldn't show your drawers to fellas, especially in the second grade. Nobody, I didn't know that till I was 35. Anyway, the teacher walked in, and I was showing my drawers to this fella for the nickel, and I got busted, and they did not get in trouble, and I did not get my nickel. To this day, I have not got my nickel. But I started finding out that if I hung out with the fellas that were having fun, I was going to get in trouble. But, you know, getting in trouble, it's like I already knew I was going to hell anyway. So it's like, what's the big deal? I guess in high school, I was afraid of people. And I am afraid of people. Especially, it's like I always hung out with fellas, but I was afraid of fellas. And I wouldn't hang out with girls because I was afraid of them, and they were competition anyway. I was a little less afraid of fellas, like bad guys, you know, because I thought the bad guys, a lot of times I thought that they were not as smart as the good guys. So then I felt okay enough to hang out with them. I found out later that alcoholics are the most brilliant people in the world. I could never catch up with them. I could never outsmart them. I mean, and for years, I tried and tried and tried. Tammy was talking about last night going to prison, going to jail. And it's like I never went to jail. I just got married. It was the same thing to me. You know, it was like I spent 2 10-year sentences with 2 different husbands. I met the first husband when I was 15 years old. And I went to an adult, a grown-up dance with my sister, and I met this. Oh, he was just beautiful. And he had been in the military, had already been to Vietnam. I was 15. He was 20-something, 22, too old for me. I still didn't know nothing about, you know, anything about showing off my flannel drawers even then. And I think he probably did. And but anyway, he took me home that night, and I thought he was just the most lovely thing. He was so clean and sparkly clean, and blue eyes and blonde hair, and just dressed so clean. He was the cleanest fellow I ever seen. Well, back then in the military, I mean, that's one of the things they teach you. You deck out, shine your boots and stuff, you know, stay clean. I thought he was wonderful, and he told me that he had worked in the Pentagon and that someday he was going to be the Secretary of Staff of the United States or something like that, and I believed him. You know, I mean, he didn't have a college education or anything like that, but, you know, I mean, I thought he was going to be that. And so I thought that sounded interesting, and it sounded a whole lot more fun than Grayson County, Kentucky, hanging out in the cornfields and trying to learn how to drive. So I hung out with him, and when I got to be a senior in high school, he was going back to Vietnam, and basically he volunteered to go back to Vietnam to get out of trouble in Hawaii, wreck some cars, and there was some problems. So he went back to Vietnam to get out of trouble, and he asked me to get engaged before he left. And I thought, wow, what a neat thing to do. I can get engaged to this older fella, and I won't have to be afraid about not having a date every Saturday night during my senior year in high school. It's like, what a trick. This is wonderful. I didn't care about him a bit more than nothing. I never worried about him going to a war zone. You know, as a matter of fact, my house was a war zone, so what? You know, I mean, living with that many people, it was loud and rowdy, and you know, we used to fight about everything, and my brothers and sisters, I mean, they would fall off the front porch ripping each other's clothes off, and fighting and stabbing each other with forks and dumping glasses of drinks on each other, you know, milk and stuff. And you just kind of had to fight for everything with that many kids. You had to fight for everything you got. And there was never enough attention. You know, attention was the biggest thing that we lacked in that family. I mean, I remember lots of food, and I remember plenty enough clothes. But I just don't remember anybody paying attention to me when I talked. And that's why, to me today, even though I'm scared to death to get up here and do it, if you guys are willing to sit there and listen to me, I mean, that is like the ultimate to me, to have somebody listen to me. Because nobody, they cared, but nobody sat long enough to listen to me. We worked and worked and worked and worked, and then for relaxation and fun, we would sit down. That's it. Sit down. You know, we didn't bowl. We didn't go dancing. We didn't go to the movies. You know, we didn't go to the store and buy candy and soft drinks. We sat down, cleaned up, and went to bed. And that's all we got to do is work, 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 work. And but anyway, we were engaged in my senior year, and that was cool. And he came home in February of 1972 and wanted to get married. And I thought that was a lovely idea. I only had a few more months of high school to graduate, and they weren't teaching me much anyway. So I quit school, and I got married, and I moved away from this big, loud, rowdy family. I knew that he was going to give me the attention that I really wanted and deserved, and all I had to do was love him a lot. We moved away to Virginia because he was in the military, and very soon I learned how to be a good military wife. I learned how to spit shine boots and iron and starch uniforms, and that meant any time of the day or night. I learned how to do, I did that. He could come in dead drunk at 11 o'clock at night, and his boots had to be shined and ready for the next morning. Now, when he first started teaching me how to do this stuff, I thought, oh, gee, we're spending quality time. You know, I didn't know that once I learned how to do it to his specifications, it would become my job. And that is the way my life's been. You know, I've always been really excited and interested in learning how to do new things. And then before I know it, I am up to my neck in stuff that I don't even want to do. But it's just because I know how, and it becomes my job. And that's what happened with him. I found out that he liked going out a lot, and he liked drinking a lot. I mean, I knew he liked drinking a lot before, and I knew he liked fighting a lot before, because we would go out and there would always be fighting, and sometimes there would be guns, and usually there would be a lot of car wrecking and stuff like that. But I knew that as soon as we got married, all that would change. You know, where I got that idea, I have no idea. I don't know. I don't think anybody else in my family thought that. You know, but I was like the 11th kid. My mom and dad were not going to try to stop me. I was too hard-headed, too stubborn. I was going to do what I was going to do. About 2 weeks after we were married, I said something that really ticked him off, and we started fighting. He started hitting me, and I would try to hit him back. Now, yesterday when Tammy was talking about being able to fight and having a switchblade, oh, it's like, oh, my God, I wish I'd had one. I wish somebody had taught me those things. That would have come in handy in both my marriages, actually. But I didn't know how to fight. Nobody taught me how to fight. I only knew how to lose. So I would always lose those fights, no matter, I rarely ever got a good punch in. One time I did hit him up the side of the head with an ashtray about this big, and I hit him so hard that I almost knocked him out. And that's the only time that I remember getting a good punch in. The rest of the time I lost. Very soon I started just giving up and saying, well, if I don't fight back, he will hurt me less. And there went the last bit of self-esteem I had. You know, because when you give up and you don't even fight for yourself, you know, you just let yourself be beat up, it tears you down. By the time that I got finished with him, he got finished with me, I knew that he could read my mind, and that if anything, that I couldn't think anything bad about him, because if I did, he would know and he would beat me up for it. And that's how bad it got. I'm not saying that it wasn't good in between, because if it was just bad, 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 bad all the time, you know, I'm not that stupid. I would have left. But see, it would be bad, and then it would be so good, and then it would be bad, and then it would be so good. And eventually, it has to get so bad that no matter how good it gets, it won't be good enough. And it got that good when my daughter got to be about 4 years old, and I just knew that she didn't deserve to watch her father beat her mother up, because I knew she didn't deserve that. I didn't know I didn't deserve it, but I knew she didn't deserve it. So I got a divorce because I thought that she deserved a sane parent. And I wish I could say that I was, you know, went right out, got myself a good job, and became self-supportive and emotionally stable and all that stuff. And what I did was desperately seek the next man that was going to fix me, because I was not a whole person, you know, alone. I needed a man for me to be whole. And the kind of man that I needed was not a good, loving, caring man, but it was a man that needed my assistance to be whole himself. It's like we needed each other to make one whole. And we made a hole, all right, in every wall we ever went past, practically. God, you know, we made lots of holes and lots of walls and heads and skins and cars and everything else, you know. I mean, and I don't know what it was about me that attracted those kind of people. Because, see, in my mind, I see myself as this quiet, shy little person. And am I or am I not this quiet and shy little person? I don't know, you know, but somehow these people were attracted to me, and I loved them. And I knew that if I just loved them enough, they would be okay. There was a span in there where I was just desperately seeking the next man. And, you know, lots of Al-Anons, they don't necessarily talk so much about doing drugs or drinking or anything like that. Now, whatever man I was with at the time, whatever they did, I tried to do as much as they did. It's just I couldn't do as much as they did. And alcohol, if I had been an alcoholic, if that magical thing happened to me like it did Tammy, maybe I would have learned how to use a switchblade and it would have been easier on me, you know, maybe. But it didn't work. I didn't feel that magic. When I would drink, I would just go to sleep and I would miss everything. You know, lots of stuff would happen, I would miss it. And it's like, well, what's the point? You know, I'm missing all the fun. So drinking wasn't, I did drugs, I drank, it just didn't work. But that man was my addiction. I needed that man. And it's just like, you've heard of a dry drunk. Well, if I didn't have my man, it was like I was on a dry drunk and I needed one. And I couldn't be a good mother to my daughter. I would ignore her and go out and leave her with babysitters that smoked pot and showed porno movies with her in the room and stuff like that. I did that. You know, you would think that because I didn't have an alcoholic husband that I would be a good mom, you know, and I would do all these right things. And it's like, no, I did not. I didn't. At that time, you know, it never entered my mind that alcoholism was a problem in my family growing up or that it was a problem anywhere. I didn't know what in the hell was wrong. I moved to Northern Kentucky. I got transferred to Northern Kentucky. Well, the reason I took the transfer to Northern Kentucky was because my dad died. And what happened during the time that my dad was dying, I had always wanted to have a relationship with my father, and I never could get close to him. He drank, and he thought his sons were the best. You know, and he put a lot of emotion into his sons, and I wasn't a son, even as hard as I tried. And he just, you know, I mean, the 11th kid, big deal. And I never had that relationship with my father. And during the time that my father got sick, at that time, God had actually sent me a nice man, you know. He was good. He brought me presents, and he helped me take care of my daughter. And, you know, when we had a nice apartment, you know, it's like the picket fence story that Tammy was talking about. We had it. I mean, God gave me a break. And when my father got sick, it's like my head just got all screwy, you know, and I had no guidelines. I had nothing to follow as to what to do. All I knew is this nice man was not like my father, and I did not want him anymore. He would write me love songs and sing love songs and play the guitar. And you know, now that's nice. He would write them just for me, and he would sing them to me, you know, and buy me presents. And he would sing those songs, and I would think, God, would you just shut up? Would you just shut up and get out of my face? You know? And, I mean, I just loaded him up and took him to another apartment. I found him another apartment and moved him in it to get rid of him. And I even during that time, as crazy as I was, I even dated my first ex-husband a little bit in there, the one that beat the snot out of me. I mean, I could have very well been killed by this man. And you know, where the idea came from that I should see him again is bizarre today. But that was just part of what I was doing at the time. I accepted a transfer to Northern Kentucky after my father died because I was never going to let anyone, let myself care that much about anybody again, because I didn't want to be hurt like that again. I moved to Northern Kentucky, and for about a year I was desperately searching and didn't find any, which was amazing. Didn't find any that I could actually move in, you know, capture and move in. That's what I was working on. And right before I was supposed to get a transfer back to Northern, to Louisville, I met this fella at the swimming pool. And he, oh, right away, I'm checking out all the things that we have in common. He has a daughter, and her name is Christy, and I have a daughter, and her name is Christy. And he's at the pool, and I'm at the pool, and he's drinking beer, and I'm willing to drink beer if you want to. So I got loaded, and he gave me his phone number, and I called him up. So he told me to call him sometime if I wanted to go swimming, and I called him up, but I found out later he never went swimming. The only time he ever went swimming was when his daughter was in town, and he didn't know what else to do. I also found out that all of his family was flat wore out with him. I didn't know what his family had was neglecting him. And his friends, I mean, he just didn't have hardly any friends. And this poor man had no one to love him. So I found us an apartment, and I moved him in, and I decided I was going to love him as much as possible, which started the second 10-year sentence. I mean, and that's the way it went. He didn't hit me and beat me up as bad as someone else. Now, on the scale of picking out a good husband, I don't think there's a portion on that list that, well, he don't hit me as hard as the first husband, give him 10 points. You know, I don't think that's on there, but I mean, the pamphlet I had at the time did. I mean, that was a check mark, you know. And at the time, I didn't know that I could make choices. It's like I thought that I had to take whatever nut fell off the tree in front of me and make him into whatever I wanted him to be. And I didn't even know what I wanted him to be because I didn't even know what I wanted to be. I didn't know who I was or anything else. I was so immature. But like I said, I moved away from home. I quit high school, moved away from home when I was 17 years old. I had never listened to anything anybody told me before then. I had listened to anything anybody told me after then. So how was I supposed to grow up? I did it on my own. And I guess I watched some TV or in there or something and got some ideas, and none of them worked. But anyway, I stayed with him. You know, we were living together and all this stuff. And my daughter, by then, she was maybe in the sixth grade. And I think it was like in the sixth grade, she met a little girl that was in Alateen. And thank God for Alateen, because she came home from school. Her and this girl became friends. And she came home from school and she said, Mom, my friend goes to Alateen, and I would like to go with her. And her mom goes to Al-Anon, and maybe you might want to go with her. And it's like, who have you been talking to about our problems? And that just ticked me off, first of all. But okay, fine, I'll go. Because I was feeling guilty because husband number two, which had not become a husband yet, he was simply a live-in at the time, had been being mean to her. So I thought, oh, I'll try to make it up by doing whatever she wants me to do, you know, just get her to shut up. And so I went to Al-Anon and she went to Alateen. And I went to Al-Anon, and it's like, yeah, right. You know, all these ladies, people sitting around laughing and talking, and it's like, you don't live where I live. You don't have a husband like mine. You know, hell, he ain't even my husband. You don't have a boyfriend like mine. You know, you don't live like I do. You never have lived like I do. And I kept on going back, and they didn't talk much about how they lived. Actually, they really didn't talk about how bad it was at home. I mean, honest to God, I needed to hear somebody say that it was hellacious at their house, because it was hellacious at my house. But they talked about let go and let God and pray, and you don't have to attend every fight you're invited to. And it's like... Right, some smartass is going to get, somebody's going to get in my face and smart off, and I'm going to keep my mouth shut, and I'm going to tell him, well, I'm sorry you feel that way. I don't think so. You know, I am going to straighten them out is what I'm going to do. I am going to line them up. And that was my job. I decided that Thursday night would probably be a good night to go to a meeting every Thursday night, because that was payday night, and he would stop, cash his paycheck, get drunk on the way home, and we would always have a fight. So I thought maybe if I wasn't there, things might change. Well, they did. By the time I would get home from the meeting, he would be passed out, and Thursdays would be peaceful. And it was years later that it dawned on me that perhaps if I had not been on the other side of that door ready to chew his ass out when he walked through, perhaps he might not have been so mean. He might not have been so set coming through that door to begin with. Because I use an example. It's like I'm a little Chihuahua and he's a Rottweiler. And as soon as he would walk in the door and be drunk and where have you been and what are you doing and blah, 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 I would start chewing him and he would just swap me off like a Rottweiler and a Chihuahua. And that was the way it went for so many years. But I kept on going to that one Al-Anon meeting a week. I had a life. I was busy. I did not have a whole lot of time to devote to this Al-Anon thing. You know, I heard some stuff, and they said about keeping your mouth shut a lot. You know, talked about keeping your mouth shut a lot. And I was like, fine, fine, fine. I'm going to focus on keeping my mouth shut. So mostly all I did was work myself into a good case of bulimia. Because I started making myself throw up. That's the only way I could control my mouth, was I could eat, and then I could make myself throw up. And I found out that some people do that. Thank God it only took me a year to get out of that, because I know people that live a lifetime with that problem. But for the first year, I went to one meeting a week. That was about it. I had a sponsor, but I didn't call her. I didn't work any steps. I just went to the meetings. Sometimes I'd go out to Frisch's, and I would find myself laughing about stupid stuff, which, you know, that was amazing. Because at first, when we would go out to Frisch's, and they would talk about alcoholism and Al-Anonies and stuff like that, it would really make me angry. Because I didn't think that this disease was funny at all. You know, I was getting hurt, and people that I loved were getting hurt, and this disease was not funny. And I didn't see that they had actually grown enough to get past the pain and the anger and get to the place where they could look at themselves and actually laugh at the stupidity of their own choices. You know, and that's what they were doing. They were not laughing at me. They were laughing at themselves. And they were rejoicing in learning that there's a better way. And I had not found that better way yet. And that's why it hurt me so bad to hear those people laughing and talking and having a good time and making fun of this whole damn thing that I was still living in. Somewhere in there, I got my own place. And now, remember, any husband I ever had, those geographical cures, I would do them. You know, I would move out, move in, move out, move in, move out, move in. And with this fellow, we had never been married yet, but we had moved in and out and in and out and in and out so many times that it was ridiculous. And I thought, well, maybe one way if I will move out is if I buy my own place, then I have to pay for it. So, I mean, I'm committed. I have to pay for it, so I'll have to stay there. He came with me. I mean, he just come to my house, so what? So then we have two houses. I have one, and he has one. He'll come to my house when he's not drinking, because by then I've told him that a boundary is, I don't want to be around with you when you're drinking. And he said, well, okay. So he would go home and drink. Now, he did not make a boundary that I was not allowed to come around him when he was drinking. He should have. Because what I started doing then was going to his place and picking his lock and going in his house and searching his house to find out what was going on with him. I did that one morning on the way to an Al-Anon meeting. Now, this is how healthy I am. On the way to an Al-Anon meeting, I drove right past his condo, and I thought, hey, I'm going to find out what's up with him. And I picked the lock. I'm good at that. If the lock goes in, I can show you how to open it. And his did. So I just slide that little credit card in there and go in just like that. Do a little search, find out what I wanted. And I found what I always, you know, what you find. And then I went on to the Al-Anon meeting, and I thought, oh, my God, I cannot tell anybody I did that. That's against the law. You know, and that is so embarrassing. I can't talk about that. And going around the room, when it came my turn, it's like, well, you got to talk about that, because that is this disease. You have to tell the truth. You have to let these people know how really sick you are. So I told him, I just broke into my, you know, fella's house, just picked the lock and went in. And after the meeting was over, I bet you four people came up and said, now we have done that too. It really is against the law. You could get in trouble, so don't do it again. Call us first. Now, wasn't the last time I did it. I heard them say that. So I identified, and it helped me to feel more a part of Al-Anon, to know that there were other women out there picking the locks. to get into their fellas' houses. This one Friday night, I was taking the kids to the movies. And I had seen him earlier, and he was already drinking a little bit. And he was real anxious to get me to get out of his house and go home. And, you know, I knew that he had plans. And so I went home for a while, took the kids to the movies, drove by his house, telling myself I need to check on his physical health, because he was drinking a lot. I mean, 2 quarts of that stuff. He really was drinking a lot, and I needed to stop by and check to see if he was dead or hurt or something. Well, he never died or got hurt or anything. He didn't. God takes care of him. But anyway, I pick the lock, and I go into the living room, and there's women's clothes on the sofa and a purse and all this stuff. And, you know, my good Al-Anon sense would tell me, back right on out of that door and go home. Cut myself some slack, you know? But no. You know, my good thinking said, trip on up them steps, flip on the light, and see what's up. See what's up. Oh, my. Well, anyway, one thing was up when I went into the room was this little thin blonde with green bikini panties on and nothing else. And she jumped up off that bed like, who in the world are you? And it's like, no doubt. I mean, I reckon so. I walked in there and it's like flipped on all the lights, overhead lights and everything, blows the romance plumb out of there. And I started throwing things. Well, I bought this for you and I bought this for you. And I broke pictures and full-length mirrors and I cracked the bathtub that night. I'm surprised I didn't tear the toilet out. I went down the steps throwing pictures and breaking things, and I was just about to start throwing chairs out the front windows, and he came running down naked through the glass and chased me out into the parking lot, and I left. And then he called me up and said, I better get back over there and clean that glass because the dog, our puppy, was cutting his feet. And it's like, don't you know I'm going to? You know, and good sense would say, go back to your Al-Anon meetings, cut this thing right here, and leave it alone. You've had enough. 6 weeks later, I married him. Now, I might have had a slip. Do you think that's an Al-Anon slip? To marry an active alcoholic after you catch him in bed with somebody else. But, I had to have him. He was the one. I had to have him. I could not lose him to anybody else. God, I broke out in the biggest stupid I ever broke out in. But God knows what I need more than I know what I need. Because God knew that if I ever got to that place where it was just all right, I would never get serious about Al-Anon. I'd been going 3 years probably, and I had never really gotten serious about Al-Anon. And because I was still breaking out major stupids every week, like going over to his house, breaking in stuff. So I wasn't getting all that much better. And when I married him, I started going to a meeting every day of the week. I got a sponsor. I started going to daytime meetings, nighttime meetings. I started talking to that sponsor. I started working the steps. You talk about being committed. I was committed to do what I said I was going to do if it killed me. I honest to God learned so much that year. It was like I took a 5-year Super Al-Anon course in 1 year because I was desperate. It was terrible. It was terrible. The very first night that we were married, he wanted a complete financial disclosure. The second night we went on our honeymoon and he just about pitched me out in the mountains, in the Smoky Mountains. And then the next day he took my ring off my finger and went home. He never moved more to our house than he could put in a Corvette. You know, and you can't move a whole lot. I mean, how committed can you get in a Corvette? I mean, you could get maybe less committed on a Harley, you know. I mean, a little less committed. And that was part of the time, too. Oh, it was terrible. And my daughter was going through this, and I was going through this. But I was getting better. I really was. I was going to the meetings. I was being forced to go to the meetings. God was giving me the motivation to do what I needed to do. And I started doing it. And people, God, they taught me so much. Because that not fighting all the time when you need to, one of the things used to drive me crazy, as we would get in the car to go somewhere. And he would start nagging, bitching about something. Because first of all, he didn't want to take me because I would irritate his drinking, you know? And he really wanted me to stay home, but see, he knew if he just left me home, I'd bitch. So we'd get in the car, he'd start a fight, hoping that I would say, just take me home, which I did, half the time at least. And but what they told me is, why don't you just not listen? Just let it pass by you. And it's like, oh, I don't have to listen. I don't have to take it all in. I don't have to believe what he says. And it's like, right, you don't have to believe everything he says. And he would start fussing and bitching and stuff, and I would just look at the sky and the birds and, you know, whatever. And I bet you he never went longer than 10 minutes. And after 10 minutes, he would just, like, shut up and we would have a fun time. A lot of times we would have a fun time. And I think during that time, we had more fun then than we ever had. We had some really good days. I started being able to separate the disease from the person. Because on occasion, I would see the person that he really was, that I really did love. But then the disease would come back out, and he would have to go back over to his condo. He never got rid of it. We always had two houses. After about a year, he decided that marriage was just not cracked. You know, he just wasn't cracked up for marriage, and he was going to get a divorce. And he moved out and was getting a divorce right at Christmas time. And the only thing that got me through Christmas was Al-Anon and cussing. You know, you know, I believe that you need to be spiritual. I really do. God is very important to me. But God also knows what I need to be able to be spiritual and to be peaceful. And I mean, that summer, I dug the hell out of my front yard, cussing. I mean, just cussing and getting all the anger and the hurt and the pain out. I needed to do that. I needed to do that fourth step. I needed to tell people how I felt. And all of it wasn't nice and sweet and kind and good. It wasn't. I had to let all that come out. And it was real, real hard for me. But I made it through. And then he gets a DUI right after the divorce is final. And we just, well, of course, I got to help him get through this DUI. This is going to be the one that's going to get him sober. So we get back together, and he goes through treatment, and he's sober for like 5 months. And I'm thinking that this is going to really be it, you know? And what it was the opportunity. God gave us the opportunity for him and my daughter to make amends to each other. Because during the time that he was sober, we all got to make amends to each other for the damage that we had done to each other for 10 years. And at the end of this deal, we had run out of stuff to do, flat out of stuff to do. We had nothing else. We got married, got divorced. We had done the whole deal. There was nothing left. I had no ideas left to work on this man. It was like when you know that the beer won't work, and you know the light beer won't work either, and the wine won't work. Nothing is going to work. I knew nothing was going to work. And even though I cared about him a lot, he wasn't going where I was going, and I was not going to go down anymore. I needed to have a life. I needed to keep on following this Al-Anon path because I was getting better, even though it was very painful. And Tammy was talking about that really big hole. And at that time, I feel like I had the biggest emotional toll that I've ever had in my whole life. And it's like I remember talking to God. It's like, okay, fine, God. I divorced him. I got rid of him. Now I am done. I have done all these four steps. I've done all these steps. You know, I'm about as happy as zilch. You know, but I am doing what you damn well told me to do. And now you start filling up my life. And, you know, and I wasn't talking to him nice, neither. I wasn't saying, okay, God, give me lovely birdie stuff, you know. I was saying, damn you, it's time. And the deal is my sponsor at that time, he used to tell me all the time, Marlene, you don't have to wait for God to get ready. He's ready all the time. You got to be ready. And that was it. I was not ready with letting myself be happy and be okay. I had never, ever, ever had that in my life. I kept on going to Al-Anon a lot, you know, a whole lot. I wasn't desperately seeking anybody. I had given myself some fun stuff. I gave myself a red convertible. That was a blast. I went to college, and I found out that I could make straight A's if I wanted to. I wasn't as stupid as I thought I was. I started giving myself good stuff, or God started giving me good stuff, and I started letting myself have it. And I went to an Al-Anon meeting, and kind of bummed out about something my daughter was doing, and I looked down, and there was these nice set of legs over there beside of me, and I looked up, and they were attached to this older man, and it's like, holy moly. I haven't been attracted to anybody's legs for a while, especially not anyone that's, older, and it's like, oh, Lord. But it was in an Al-Anon meeting, Al-Anon fella, Alcoholics are my type. I love them alcoholics, Well, I found out he was an alcoholic, too. He'd just been going to Al-Anon, And the first time I met him, I thought he was real cute. And then the next week, on Thursday night, I went back just to find out if he was married. And he wasn't. And I had decided I was going to ask him to go out for coffee if he didn't ask me. He asked me to go out for coffee, and we started dating. And it was amazing. It was different than anything I've ever known in my life. He was honest, and he did what he said he was going to do, and he was dependable. And, I didn't break out in stupids. I didn't break out in stupids. I mean, I didn't automatically want to move him into my house or anything. He was happy, and he didn't need me to fix him. He had lots of friends. Everybody told me he was a really nice guy, and he had lots of friends and stuff, and it's like, wow. And me and a bunch of my girlfriends, we had these at-home meetings, which were kind of sick, really, because you can take Al-Anon out of these rooms and into a private meeting where everybody's still sick, and you can make yourself a whole little sick Al-Anon cult going on. And we did, and we supported each other in our sickness. But one of the things that we did was we made out a list of things that we wanted in a man. And everybody had told me, no way will you ever find that. Never. Because I said, I don't want to cook. I don't want to clean. I really don't need anybody around all the time. That's not necessary. Sunday afternoons, Thursdays, in between my meetings is what I wanted. And all this stuff. And it was so fun because when I met Dick, he absolutely fit that. He fit that. It's like, God, what you doing here? You are giving me what I asked for. And then on top of that, he gave me more. Because all my life, I moved away from that really big family that I thought I didn't want and didn't need. But ever since I left, I had wanted that. I had wanted that family. I had wanted people to come by my house, stop by and see me and hang out. I wanted to hang out with kids, nieces and nephews and stuff. And I never had that because I always lived farther away. And I wanted to have three daughters. But God knew that with the husbands I was going to have, I could only handle one. So God only gave me one daughter. But Dick has two daughters. Christy, my daughter, had always asked, she had always wanted to have older brothers and sisters. Now, how do you get older brothers and sisters for somebody? Dick's kids are older than my daughter. She got an older brother and two older sisters. And then on top of that, Dick had two little granddaughters that were absolutely marvelous. And they would ride around. I'd put the top down on the convertible, and we'd put on our little sunglasses, and we'd go cruising. These little, oh, my God, I loved his granddaughters. And then when Christy was born, I was so afraid, and I was in Virginia by myself, no family around and stuff. And they asked me, they said, now, we can do a cesarean, or you can hang on and go through this deal. I said, oh, please put me to sleep and get this baby out. I don't want to be there. And so I didn't see Christy till the next day. But I got to see Dick's grandson be born. And I never thought anything about ever wanting a son or a little boy. And this little boy was amazing. I got to see him be born. I got to be the first person to hold him. He actually helped me to know that I qualified as a family member in that family. When Dick and I got married, we had to go through a lot to become a family. And when that little baby was born, and I taught him to call me Nana, and he was the first person to start calling me Nana, and he loved me. He knew no other Nana. I was it. And His son, one time they were having a party at their house, and he was talking, and he said that after his mom died the year, in the spring of the year that I met his father. I never knew his mom. She was in AA, and she stayed sober for a while, but then she started drinking again, and she got real sick, and she died of alcoholism. And I never knew her, but her son said that he believed that her and God had got together and sent me to their family to bring them all back together and to make them a family. And it's like, how good can it don't get better than that? You know, he sent me this family that thought I was sent from God, this little naughty-headed, curly-headed, hard-headed little girl that was going straight to hell because she could not remember the commandments, was sent by God to a family to bring them together. And I really felt that, too. They really did love me. I have never in my life ever had anybody love me like my husband does. And the deal is how can you not love somebody that loves you that much? I mean, this is just amazing. I knew within 2 weeks from the first time that I married those other two fellas that I should not have done it. And 10 years was the most that I could stand it. Now, my husband says he's going to have to renew in about 4 years. We've been married about 6 years. And he's wondering if I'm going to renew. Well, absolutely, I'm going to renew. I love him more today than I ever have. I could go on and on and on telling you the things that we have that is just, it's more than I could ever, ever ask for. And it all came from just surrender and letting God give me what he wanted, working the steps, doing the next right thing, dragging my ass to the meetings when I didn't want to go, working them steps when I didn't want to work them, doing what they said when I didn't want to do them. And it just started working out. And I didn't believe it. I didn't believe it would work for me, you know, but somewhere in there it did start working. And today it's like, I am happy. Yes, I am happy. And I am happy to peacefully watch mud dry. 'Cause nobody ain't whacking me in the head while I'm doing it. Nobody's not taking anything away from me and hurting me, you know. And most of the time while I'm watching the mud dry, there'll be a bunch of people hanging out with me watching it. And that's really cool. I mean, it's amazing to be asked to come to talk somewhere. But it's even more amazing to be asked to come back somewhere where people have already heard me. Because in the old days, I was such a bitch and whined and nagged and bled all the time. People got wore out with me just as fast as they did any alcoholic I've ever known. And by the time I got to Al-Anon, I had wore out people, wore out everybody. And I'm just so grateful for AA, Al-Anon, and Alateen. And any of you that think, you know, like any of you that have children, and you know, maybe your kids might not want to go to Alateen. Take them anyway. Take them anyway. Those Alateens can make a difference in people's lives. I've heard lots of people say, punish them by sending them to Alateen. You know, make them go to 6 meetings whether they like it or not. And that's not a bad thing. Because, I mean, none of us came to Al-Anon or AA all frolicky and happy and joyous to be here. You know, we got here because, you know, almost like a punishment. We were out of stuff to do. And Alateens can absolutely make a difference in families. It did mine. And I'm just so grateful. And to be in a place like this and watch, like I said the other night, I love coming to places like this and watching people love each other and be respectfully of each other, and just hang out and laugh and live. And just live and love and laugh and all that corny stuff. Because here is where I see it, and here's where I learn it so that I can take it home and give it to my family, you know, because that wasn't the way we grew up. But it's really fun to be able to take it back and live it with them. So I thank you very much for asking me to be here, and I'm really happy that I'm finished. Thanks a lot.